Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org. Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host, and as promised, Dr. Greg Bataro is here with us. He's a Catholic psychologist. He's the founder of the Catholic Psych Institute and the creator of the Catholic Psych Model of Applied Personalism, and we'll talk about that a bit with him. Before he was married, he was a Franciscan friar for 4 years with Father Benedict Gréchel and the Friars of the Renewal, and he's now married, and he's got 7 kids under 11. So Steve Ray was jet-lagged, and now we've got Dr. Bataro, 7 kids under 11. This is the tiredest show that we have done all year. Dr. Greg Bataro, thanks for being here with us.
Thanks so much. I'll try to stay awake, but I think you'll keep me awake here.
It's all tired people today. We've got nothing but tired guests today. Fortunately, I slept well last night, and my kids are grown, so I'll bring the energy. But let me just ask you a little bit about the Catholic Psych Institute first, and then we'll talk a little bit about. I said in the introduction to the show, and I will say it again now, that I think a lot of Catholics are conflicted about mental health professionals, about medications for mental illness, because psychology and spirituality are so close. They're right next to each other, and sometimes probably overlapping. So yeah. People are not sure which is the thing for the priest, which is the thing for the psychologist, which is the thing for the hospital, which is the thing for confession. You know, like there, or do I just need to have more faith? So I want to talk about all that with you, but maybe you could just start with what the Catholic Psych Institute is.
Yeah, that's a great insight, and it's a really great question to lead off on because they are so close and they do overlap, and it's really we're talking about the person. And we treat the person. And the mental health field is aiming to treat the person. That's the sort of object of treatment, so to speak. And when the problem is, there's not a really good definition, an articulation of what a person is. And this becomes really difficult for a lot of the secular field, sort of taking shots in the dark at what is the object of this practice and what is this field. So I think a lot of the hesitation, the difficulty, the challenge comes from the fact that there are actually a lot of misdirected approaches, and some skepticism and some caution is warranted. What we aim to do is bring a model based on faith and reason to the field of psychology. And we're trying to say, okay, of course, we're open to the sciences. We need science. We want to see what science has to tell us. But that cannot be the foundation of our understanding of what a person is. And if we come at it with the lens of faith, which is revealed truth, and reason, which is sort of understandable truth, then we can get very far with building a sense of what the person is. And then using that model, we can then say, okay, well, what does the science tell us in addition? How much more does the science help us explore and explain and color in the details about what it is to be human? And so that's our project. Catholic Psych Institute marries faith, reason, and science to give us a standard of mental health based on a true vision of the human person.
That's a big project. You're aware of that. Like this is an important project because there is a kind of I don't know, reductionism in a good deal. In medicine in general, we see the tendency to reduce everything to chemical analysis or imaging or that kind of thing, where even the doctor becomes a kind of just technician rather than a healer, so to speak. So it's a big project to try to make this about the person again.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, in the physical sciences, it's a little bit easier to stick to the physical and the observable. I would say that's still not going to give the full answer, but at least if you're a heart surgeon, if you're a cardiologist, you need to know, you know, what's going on in the heart. What is, you know, what's a healthy heart look like? What are the healthy chemical levels, the blood pH? You know, what does a broken heart or a, you know, dysfunctional heart look like? Yeah. And then what medicines do we test to make it work correctly? But we're sticking with a sort of physical thing here. It's a heart. And so it is a little bit more understandable to stick more in that realm when it comes to the physical medical sciences. But yeah, when we're talking about the person, we're opening up to the reality of having a spirit, having a soul. And if there's this immaterial dimension of being human, then we have to account for that in our model of being a human person.
Now, I think a lot of people will get squeamish at this point, and they'll be like, first of all, there's always the accusation of Christianity being anti-science. So that oh, you just don't want to follow the science. You want to add this other thing in, or you want to, I don't know. But there's this other thing about, well, people want hard things like data and all that. And you're talking about things that seem a little airy. They seem a little ephemeral. So how can we make these things go together?
Yeah, I would say, look, at first glance, I can understand that. It makes sense. If you start to dig deeper, let's look at the scientific method. What is the scientific method? It's a series of testing theories and hypotheses to find out if what we think is not true. Like, that's ultimately what the scientific method is, to prove a null hypothesis. It's like, if we hold an idea based on scientific method until it's disproven by somebody else's research. And so what we end up having is this series of observable, testable data that gives us an idea of what we think is the best reasonable assessment of the way that the world is. And to put a faith in that, to believe in that in some kind of objective way, is ludicrous. And it takes, you know, I've heard other people say it very simply, it takes more faith to believe in science than it does to believe in Jesus. Because the evidence within the scientific method is actually trying to tell people to not believe in it with faith. The whole system is built in such a way as to say, this is what we know to be true until it's proven false. Whereas to believe in something with faith is to say that this is true no matter what happens, no matter what we think. And it stands the test of time. It stands the test of inquiry. And at the end of the day, it shouldn't be in dispute. But if we sort of take that step out and see the 30,000-foot view, we realize we want to believe in something. We're built to believe in something. And it makes perfectly rational sense to believe in something. And then, you know, then the next part of the argument, the second piece of what you brought up here in terms of there being this dichotomy or this sort of conflict between faith and science. Well, I think that's also a bit ludicrous. It was Catholics who really developed the practice of the scientific method. And there should be no conflict or problem with understanding the created order that God has given us. And so that's what the scientific method is. Here's the world we find ourselves in, and we're going to apply this approach to make more sense of it. That's perfectly reasonable. And there's nothing in that that says that we then take the leap to believe somehow that God doesn't exist or something atheistic.
Well, okay, so let me get down to practical then. Does this make for a practical difference in the way you practice psychology? Because you have a doctorate in psychology. And what would that practical difference look like? What difference does it make to say we treat the whole person, body and soul?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's nothing more practical than this. I mean, the secular field of psychotherapy and psychology is severely limited by what can be observable through scientific study, and it's unfortunately not only limited by the sort of, let's call it, innocent limitations of what has so far been discovered scientifically. It's also then vulnerable to disorientation by the political sort of, you know, imperfections that have come into the field. So, for instance, we know based on faith and reason that a man is a man and a woman is a woman. We also believe that human life begins at conception and that the human life has eternal dignity and deserves our respect and our protection. Well, if there aren't enough studies to prove that, according to the APA, well, we don't hold those things to be true. And so, you know, the APA, the American Psychological Association, has issued continual task force reports and findings saying that we are obliged, as if you're a member of the APA and you're following APA ethics codes, to follow gender affirming, quote unquote, care in allowing and supporting, you know, the testing of hormone therapy on children, surgeries on children, things like that. I mean, it doesn't get more basic or practical than that. I don't need a study to tell me that a boy is a boy and a girl is a girl.
Right.
And I don't need a study to come out and finally say, undeniably, enough research has been compiled to say that abortion harms women and men and children. We know that to be true. We don't have to wait for the studies. And so if I'm walking with somebody, these are the kinds of immutable human truths that ground the foundation of how I see a person and how I'm working to help a person take the next good step in their life and become a better version of who God created them to be. That is something that is entirely missing from somebody practicing from a solely scientific, secularly based approach to the human person.
Yeah, it does seem like if you're just going to base your practice of medicine or particularly psychology on what is provable, it's going to be kind of insane. You're just going to have to deny certain things that, like you said, everybody knows, and then you have to learn to not know. Everybody has right. known for a very, very long time that a pregnant woman is carrying a baby. You have to right. work really hard to educate people in such a way that they no longer know that. And that they have to miseducate right. them to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to make this point, too. I really do want to step in and say this to not get sort of pulled in the other direction too far. I would say that proper scientific inquiry will never come up with an outcome or a conclusion that's contrary to what we believe by faith and reason. So if it's appropriate scientific inquiry or authentic, sort of unbiased scientific approach, of course, the data from science will ultimately coincide with the data of what we believe to be true through faith and reason. It's just because it's so vulnerable to these political shifts and movements and agendas that we end up seeing how data could be presented in an inauthentic way, and it becomes a kind of campaign to change the way people think about the person.
We're talking about mental health and Christian faith with a person who has made that his life study, and not just his life study, but his life's practice, helping those who are in need without excluding the faith from the practice of psychology. Dr. Greg Bataro is our guest. Your calls are welcome. 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884.
There's only one Catholic Answers Live.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
carry the faith wherever you go. Watch the EWTN series, specials, events, and news streaming live from anywhere in the world. Streaming is available on the EWTN app for Apple, Android, and Amazon devices. Download the EWTN app at EWTNapps.com today.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Our guest is Dr. Greg Bataro. He's a psychologist, a Catholic, and the founder of Catholic Psych Institute. You can find him online. What's the website if people want to find out about what you
CatholicPsych.com.
do? CatholicPsych.com. That was hard. CatholicPsych.com. Do check it out. But if you have questions about mental health as it relates to the Catholic faith, you are certainly welcome to call here. Well, you know, any mental health question is welcome. You're certainly welcome to call. But that's our topic today. And the number is 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. I am going to go to the phones and let folks ask their questions. But in general, I want to ask a question before I go too far, because we actually get this question in various forms. But is there a Catholic position on, say, antidepressants or antipsychotic medications or various other drugs that you might take for various other psychiatric or psychological disorders? Is there a Catholic position on this?
Well, the Catholic position is very general in terms of, you know, supporting medical sciences. And if there's a medicinal intervention, a medical intervention for the good of the person, then, you know, that's to be supported under proper ethical professional medical care. You know, and when it comes to recreational use of drugs outside of a medical construct, then, of course, we would call that sinful. So that would be the Catholic position. And I think, you know, theologians, rightly so, kind of stay a little bit distant from getting into the nuances and nitty gritties of like different kinds of medication or different kinds of diagnosis, and sort of relegate that all to the medical sciences. And, you know, when we get into individual therapists and different perspectives, now we get into a lot more opinion.
Sure.
But I wouldn't say that we would call it a Catholic position.
But I have known Catholics. I mean, as a matter of fact, not a few. Like, when people talk about this, it's striking to me how often this comes up for Catholics who have taken some kind of psychiatric medication who are not sure if it's because they failed in their faith. They're not sure, should I have done that, or maybe I should have just turned to Jesus or prayed the rosary more or had more faith or something.
Yeah, I see this a lot, and it breaks my heart, because I think that people suffer needlessly to an extent that God does not want us to have to suffer. In other words, there's a lot of our humanity that we are supposed to work on healing and improving. And the unity of life and the health and holistic sort of approach to our human flourishing is something we should be actually working on in terms of improving ourselves. Is there going to be suffering that we have in our life, and are we supposed to eradicate all suffering from our life? Well, no, there is going to definitely be suffering in our life, and there's a place to bring it to the cross, and we can spiritually unite ourselves to Jesus in his suffering, of course. But when it comes to health, now we should pursue health. And because of the incarnational faith that we really believe in, and Christ showed us how to be ourselves, we have to take our humanity into perspective. And I think a lot of Catholics miss the humanity of Christ. They don't realize how emotional Christ was, how much of that sort of nitty-gritty humanity was a part of the incarnation himself. And therefore, how we see ourselves and the nitty-gritty parts of ourselves, that's supposed to be drawn into the spiritual life. It's not supposed to be separated out like, oh, if we're fixing something human, it's just going to be a prayer answer. No, it really does matter what we eat. It matters how much we sleep. Yeah, you know, if I'm not getting enough sleep, no matter how many kids I have, I need to look at that and work on myself. And maybe I can improve my health by looking at those things.
All right. Are you ready to take some calls? There are folks who would like to speak with you on the line.
Sure thing.
All right. Dr. Greg Bataro is our guest, and you are welcome to call as well. There's still two lines open, 888-318-7884. We start with our friend Marie in Rhode Island, who's watching on Facebook. And I say our friend because we have known Marie for years here. She's always been good to us here at Catholic Answers. Hi, Marie.
Hi, Si. How are you?
I'm happy now. It's always nice to hear your voice. You got a question for Dr. Bataro?
Yes. A little bit of background. We're going to try to make it quick. I have three adult children, all with autism. My middle child, Joshua, he's 46, and he has major depression, anxiety, and obsessive-compulsive disorder. And sometimes it messes with his faith. You know, he says, Mom, what goes on in my head? You know, it's the doubting. And, but like I say, he tried to commit suicide in high school because of severe bullying. I believe he's a survivor. And he sees a psychiatrist, a psychologist, and he takes meds, lots of meds for mental illness. What else can I do for him?
Well, I'm really sorry to hear of that. It's a huge burden to bear, and it's a burden for him and the whole family, I'm sure. And it's you know, I think there's a book that I really love that gives me a lot of hope in situations like this called The Context of Holiness by Father Mark Foley. And it's actually a story about Saint Therese and her family. And it kind of gives a background of Therese's mom, her dad, her sisters, herself. And, you know, it turns out if we looked at St. Therese through the lens of current psychodiagnosis, we'd probably send her to the mental institute. She had so many symptoms of really severe psychopathology that, you know, she would certainly be diagnosable. And so the premise of this book is that this is part of the messiness of life. There's no real difference in this regard between a mental health issue and a physical health issue. And so it's like, yeah, could somebody, you know, what is somebody supposed to do if they have Lyme's disease, if they have cancer, if they have some other thing that's obviously a physical issue? Well, we treat mental health. We have to treat mental health. We should treat mental health the same way. God allows for suffering in this world in ways that are beyond our understanding, but he calls us to holiness in light of it, and those issues are not a mark of failing, of somehow doing it wrong. And I think the more we accept that, we find out that Jesus is with us in our suffering, and that can bring a little bit more light to the situation. So that's for you. You know, in terms of what he's suffering and what he's going through, it sounds like he's got a lot of good medical care. And, you know, I don't know, without knowing the details of anything in specific and him not being my actual patient, I couldn't possibly venture a comment about anything he could be doing differently. But I assume calling in for in the show and asking the question, probably thinking more about it on that higher level.
What do you think?
Yes, he's the best person I know. And this year he joined the church choir again. He's very talented, and he has a second degree. He's a second degree black belt. He has a second degree in black belt.
Well,
it's beautiful.
Talents.
Sure.
Yeah. But it's been a long haul for him, for the family, but for him especially. I have a daughter too. She's got the same. A little different autism on the spectrum, and she's got depression and anxiety. But she's such a kind person, and
I think they get it from their mama.
When she comes in, you know, they're wonderful kids.
Could you say the name of the book one more time? Because the book that you recommended at the beginning, Dr. Bataro?
The Context of Holiness.
The Context of Holiness. Okay. Marie, it's always good to talk with you. Thank you very much. I hope that was helpful for you. Marie, we've known Marie for years, but she only gives us a call like, oh, I don't know, every 4 or 5 years we hear from her. So it's always nice when she does call. Thank you.
That's great.
Let's go to Mary in Iowa. Mary, thank you for your call. Go ahead with your question for Dr. Greg Bataro.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My family has experienced multiple suicides. I myself have been treated for depression, cyclothymia. The community I live in is a small community, 8,000 to 10,000 people. There's typically 3 suicides a year.
Oof.
I just wonder, what is it going to take for the medical field to address this epidemic? Because currently what we're doing isn't helping. You know, I know medication is a factor for some people. Therapy, I myself wouldn't even consider doing any therapy except for Catholic therapy. I've had good results with counselors and have tried medication but have experienced side effects. So I'm more into the therapy and learning techniques and tools to help me deal with my depression. But I appreciate your work and whatever insight you can offer.
I'll tell you what, hang on through the break because the music started to play. We got to take this break, but we'll come back with the question about improving our treatment of suicide and this epidemic, as you said, of suicide with Dr. Greg Vitaro right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Deepen your connection to the Church's holy days and seasons while you draw on the wisdom of the Church Fathers. Feasts of Our Fathers, the new book from Mike Aquilina and Adam Lucas, is a treasury of history, prayers, insights, and lessons that will bring you closer to the earliest of Catholic traditions. Take your prayer life and your solidarity with the Church, past and present, to a new level. Order your copy of Feasts of Our Fathers today at shop.catholic.com.
We hope that one of the things that we communicate here at Catholic Answers Live is that our Catholic faith allows us to be fully serious about all the problems we encounter in the church and in the world, but it also lets us have light hearts and maybe even mix in a bit of fun, and that is exactly what our good friend Joe Heschmeyer does in his popular podcast, Shameless Popery. You should check it out at shamelessjoe.com. Joe's got a deep grasp of the faith, of morals, the teachings of the church, all that, but he's also got a witty conversational style. He entertains and he informs, but you will leave equipped to better answer the most common challenges, misconceptions, and questions about the Catholic faith. He's got insightful guests, he does on-air debates, and he takes a close look into all the things that you want to know about as a Catholic living today. You'll walk away knowledgeable and filled with joy. Look for Joe on his YouTube channel. Check him out at shamelessjoe.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, become a patron.
Our Lord needs articulate defenders of the truth to spread the joy of the Catholic faith. Catholic Answers Monthly Giving Club, Society 315, helps you fulfill the call in 1 Peter 3:15 to always be prepared to make a defense for the hope that is in you. For as little as $10 a month, you'll help Catholics grow in faith, bring lapsed Catholics home, and lead non-Catholics to the truth. Go to casociety315.com and join today.
I'm Deacon Harold Burke-Sivers. Join me for Beacon of Truth
today at 4 p.m. Eastern.
On the next Beacon of Truth, talking about religious freedom and continuing Soulful Psalm 119.
Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Mary in Iowa is still on the phone hanging on from the break, but she asked before we went to the break about improving treatment for and prevention of suicide. And Dr. Greg Vitaro is our guest, Catholic psychotherapist. Tell us about that. What do we need to do to be... Well, first of all, what's the problem if there's more suicide? Why are we having that? And then what do we need to do to change that?
Yeah, this is a huge, huge, huge problem. And the biggest picture of this is that, the world does not have an understanding of what it means to be human. So all of the interventions, all of the money, all of the research, all of the efforts are going into solving a problem that nobody's even clearly defined. You know, we see the symptoms are the problem, but we don't know what a person needs to be healthy. Because we don't know what a person is. And so if we don't have that standard in mind, it doesn't matter how many billions of dollars are pumped into the system. It's like going to solve the wrong problems.
Yep.
And so, yeah, the best thing I can tell you is definitely support Catholic therapists. I mean, practically speaking, you know, having people support our work, looking for us in particular, is really helpful. And it means that there's more Catholic therapists out there that have the means to do the research, to put new, you know, interventions, to experiment with new methodologies, you know, kind of take the foundation of the faith and bring it to a larger platform, the more that we are seen as offering something actually helpful.
Mary, what do you think?
Yeah, I think mental health care is treating a hemorrhage with a Band-Aid. I don't think they, like he stated, they don't know how to treat the human because they don't know who or what the human is.
And you agree with that, Mary?
I do. Yeah. It's, you know, we are mind, body, and soul. And so when you're treating just the physical symptoms, you're ignoring the rest of the person.
That certainly seems to be the case. I mean, although, is this one of those things where it may be that in their actual practice, a psychologist, even if they've been trained entirely in the secular methods, maybe they're a person who's Christian or Jewish, or, you know, has some faith in God, has some understanding that there's a soul, that maybe in their practice, these things might form a part of what they consider when they're treating people.
Absolutely. And also, even just basic secular approaches, as long as a person's human, they're going to have some encounter and touch with being human.
Yeah.
And so this is not to say that, you know, everything non-Catholic or non-Christian or non-religious is terrible. What it's meant to look at, though, is what is the structure? It's like this. If you have a car and your car breaks down and you want to take it to some place that knows how to fix it, you look for the place that knows how the car was built. You have to have an idea. The mechanic has to have an idea of the proper order of a properly ordered, a working car.
Yes, yes.
I mean, most of the therapists out there today don't even agree that the person was created. Forget about how the person was built. We don't even agree that a person was built. It's like, oh, this person just emerged accidentally over, you know, millions of years of mm-hmm. evolution or whatever. It's like, well, we're on completely radically different pages. Now, again, the scientific method is like, okay, we found ourselves with this car in our garage, and they said it was broken. Well, they say it's broken, so that's what defines pathology. Okay, that's the diagnosis. Based on subjective opinion, they don't like how they're working. Well, let's throw things at this thing and see if it makes it any better. What if we pour orange juice in the gas tank? Let's run a study. Did the car run better or not? No, okay. Well, what about when we use this thing instead? After 100 years of that, might you come up with some observations that are valuable about the person? Sure. I'm sure you figured out some stuff along the way that is helpful and useful. That's worlds apart from actually having the mechanical manual from the car manufacturer that says, here's how I built the car. Here's the way it's supposed to work. And if this is happening, that means it's broken. When we have that manual, then we can actually do a lot of good for a lot of people.
And do you think that manual is given to us in the revelation that Christ gave us about the human person?
Absolutely. The Gaudium et Spes 22, Christ reveals man to himself and makes his divine calling clear. Jesus is the revelation of the perfect, healthy human person. And everything else that comes in our faith out of the revelation of Christ is the sort of fleshing out of the manual, the blueprint of the human person. And that's what we can take as our lead and the foundation of what it means to be human.
Mary, I'm very grateful for your call. Very helpful to the conversation. And I do, we don't solve the problem here today, but the more we talk about it, the more hope there is. There does seem to be just this massive dysfunction in our whole society, Dr. Bataro, as far as what is a human being and what constitutes happiness in a human being. And I think sometimes, like young people, they actually... they're given this idea that comfort and pleasure are, and maybe a certain kind of letting go of trauma or something. I'm not exactly sure how they talk about it these days, but these are the keys to happiness. But that you know, getting yourself in a place where you're comfortable, where other people aren't upsetting you and all that, and also maximizing your pleasure. That this is what's going to make you happy, and I want to let you answer. I know I'm talking too much, but one place I see, when I say maximizing pleasure, I don't mean just sexual pleasure. I mean like you actually get articles in major American magazines that say, you know, don't invest in or don't spend your money on goods. Spend your money on experiences. You should go on cruises. You should take tours. And you think the person who's writing this article knows nothing about what actually makes a human being happy.
Yeah, exactly. It's true. And, you know, it's interesting because, you know, what I see as a real breakdown of our postmodern society, we've sort of detached entirely from a fabric of tradition. And so we have the young kids today, the generations today, and actually within this newer generation, in the last two generations, I've seen this complete survey of all the philosophical movements in history. And so, like, you're talking about hedonism, and sure, like, there's a certain level of hedonism that you can find that in pockets. But, you know, there's also this emergence of stoicism.
Yeah.
And you have these, like, stoic ideas that are also really popular. And you get certain podcasters that are all about the stoic ideals. And then you get people – now all of a sudden, like, communism, you know, all these communist ideals, certain pockets of people are attaching to these communist ideals. You know, we have new waves of misogyny and different ideas of,
right,
you know, feminism coming at it from one angle, and then, you know, radical feminism, and then misogyny and these old patriarchal systems. And it's like we're living in this hurricane of
bad
ideology.
Ideas. I'm sorry, but
they're all bad ideas.
Yeah, a hurricane of dumb ideas. Like, really, you think being a stoic is going to bring you happiness? Come on.
It's crazy. But what we've seen is a complete untethering from anything traditional. So it's no longer massive epochal movements of cultural society ideology. It's like pockets of I don't even know now, what is it, TikTok or, you know, Instagram channels or Facebook groups. And you just have like all these groups of people all at the same time with all these competing ideas. And ultimately the underlying fabric is just relativism. So
yeah. Do what makes you do what feels
whatever,
good.
Do what feels good for you. If you want to be a stoic, great. Yeah. If you want to be a hedonist, even though that's completely opposite, then great. You could do that too. Whatever floats your boat.
Just boys, don't follow idiots like Andrew Tate. Come on. Like, I'm just, I don't want to tell you what to think, but don't think that. All right. Whatever else you do, don't think that.
But we want to tell people what to think.
I guess so.
That.
Okay. So let me ask you this before we go to the break then. What does make a human being happy?
Oh, man. Well,
before I go to the break, you have 60 seconds. What makes a human being
To grow in virtue. I mean, to put it really simply, to die to self, to become united in Christ, to grow in virtue, to grow in personal human excellence, is to submit oneself to these higher ideals of the objective true good and beautiful, and to allow one's own subjectivity to be formed and transformed to become more in line with the objective true good and beautiful.
Oh my gosh, you did it in less than 60 seconds. We'll take a break. Right back with Greg Bataro.
It's all about the truth. Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Mother Angelica had a simple goal when she began EWTN, to reach the world with a gospel message. Today, EWTN offers an online learning series, its own YouTube channel, the Daily Mass and devotionals, and audio and video on demand. We've never wavered from our mandate to proclaim the truth and majesty of the Catholic faith. Thank you for joining EWTN in this mission.
The Catechism defines evangelization as the proclamation of Christ and his gospel by word and the testimony of life. But what does that look like in real life? It looks like St. Paul street evangelists out in the public square sharing the good news. We're a Catholic nonprofit that starts conversations by handing out free sacramentals. Then we employ our method of listen, befriend, proclaim, and invite. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. Visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kelly, your host. Our guest is Dr. Greg Bitaro. We've got lots of folks on the line, and I have done a lot of talking, so I'm going to let these folks talk. We'll start with this segment with Austin in Los Angeles, California. Austin, welcome. Go ahead with your question for Dr. Bitaro.
Hello. Thanks for this opportunity.
Sure.
So I'm a new Catholic. I received a conditional baptism about a month ago.
Oh, praise God. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you so much. And my best friend has been my main support on this journey. He's very passionate about the faith. He knows the faith, but spiritually he's struggling a lot, and his actions are hurting his relationships with people around in his life, including myself. But mostly I'm worried that he's hurting his soul, like he's putting his soul at risk, and he has a lot of unresolved trauma from his childhood and the way he was brought up. And I worry about him a lot, and I care about him deeply, and I want to help him, and I don't know how to approach him, how to offer help, and how to not lose hope in this, because this is also affecting me. And I understand that I need to stay positive and not lose hope so that I'm able to help him in this.
Okay.
Wow. So, well, first of all, welcome and congratulations. What an amazing step forward. And, you open up to a different grace, a new level of grace in through the sacrament. And I'm curious if you've tried to speak with him from the heart and share with him your desire for the good of his soul and what you see happening for him.
Yeah. Yeah, I have. I actually a couple of days ago, and he got very vulnerable, and he shared his feelings and what he's going through, and his life is segmented, and he doesn't know who he is, which is very sad, because again, like, he's so passionate about the faith, and he helps people around his life, and he's helped me a lot to understand the faith, to grow in my faith. But again, his actions are, and his like unresolved trauma is affecting his actions, and his actions are segmenting his life where he doesn't know who he is. He knows all these things about the faith, but the way he is acting does not correspond to the values and the faith. And
Well, I really commend your courage and your friendship and your love to be able to step out into that difficult place to talk about those things. And if he's opening up and that vulnerability comes through, I would give you a couple of points of reference to kind of maybe anchor on and maybe take some hope in. Number one, God knows his traumas and his complexity, his challenges better than he does, better than you do, and better than he does even. And so, what he probably needs is the support of friendship and a listening ear and somebody who can be an example of being grounded in the faith. And maybe he helped you find the faith, but now you found it, and now you can return the favor. And it's not so much through preaching or criticisms or corrections. Sometimes it's just the example and witness of staying firm in the faith. And you know, when somebody has layers of trauma like that, it can be really hard to even know what they're thinking and where they're at in terms of what they are open to or what they can even hear. But the experience of relationship cuts through all the mess, and just being with somebody can be very profound and instrumental in somebody's healing and growth. So I would say stay on the path, have hope. Don't worry so much about his soul as you are just considering the hope that you have in Christ and being an open channel of God's mercy for him.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Austin, thank you. Thanks very much. On we go. As I said, we've got folks on the line who I have not allowed to get through, so I'm going to limit my talking, and we'll go now to Luke in Clovis, California, watching on YouTube. Welcome, Luke. Go ahead with your question for Dr. Bitar.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello. Good afternoon. And my question is, how does one, like, how, well, like, why do, like, why do I feel guilty even though I didn't commit a mortal sin today? And how, like, would I deal with that, like, that guilt? I'm like feeling you did, and if you didn't.
Well, it's a very complex question, and I have to say, kind of disclaimer, as a psychologist, I always have to be careful when I'm answering questions live on the air. This is for informational purposes only, and it's not to be taken as therapeutic counsel. But just to say, in general, there can be a lot of reasons for guilt. And guilt is kind of a temperature gauge inside, like a thermostat. And we, there's a couple of things that are involved. One is to properly form the conscience so that we know intellectually what is objectively good and true and beautiful or not. And so we have to have formal moral education. But besides that, guilt can oftentimes get confused with shame. And we can feel ashamed of certain things or shameful about certain things. And so this can sometimes go beyond moral action. It's not so much about what you've done or not done, but it could be about who you feel you are. And so there can be an underlying sense of not necessarily I did something wrong, but I am something wrong. And a lot of times there's a deeper level of healing, of vulnerability, of sort of walking with somebody who can help you kind of uncover where some of that might be coming from. And so it might not even be a question of having committed a sin.
Thank you.
That's all.
That makes a lot of sense.
Okay. That's what you want. You're welcome to have a follow-up if you'd like. You're satisfied?
Oh, not. Yeah, I'm satisfied. Thank you very much.
All right, Luke. Thank you. Thank you very much, Luke. Colleen in Pasadena, California, listening to EWTN on Channel 130, Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Welcome, Colleen. Go ahead with your question.
Hi, welcome. Hello.
Hello. And you're welcome. Right. Thank you for making us feel welcome, too, Colleen. I appreciate that. I've never been to Pasadena before.
Thank you. Yeah, you guys are more than welcome to come. It's beautiful over here. Definitely.
Thank you.
Suggest you guys come on down to Pasadena, California. You'll love it. So my question for Dr. Bitar is, what is your opinion on the role of daily intake of the Holy Eucharist along with daily Mass and daily Rosary with regard to mental health?
Okay.
Oh, speak a little bit more. What do you mean? Like, tell me more what you mean.
Where would you put that perhaps with people who are struggling with anxiety, with depression, with all of these things? Where would you place that? Place the role of going to daily Mass, receiving the sacraments on a daily basis, such as the Holy Eucharist, and the sacrament of confession and the rosary, everything that the Catholic Church offers. What do you feel the importance, I guess, of that is in regards to assisting or helping to manage symptoms of depression and anxiety?
Yeah, great question. you know, kind of cuts to the center of a different question that I often get in terms of like, what's the connection between mental illness and spiritual health? And so using the Eucharist as kind of a litmus of, or sort of a compass to show us exactly where the spiritual comes in, is really a great question. And I think, you know, again, little disclaimer, you know, unless there's some kind of, there might be like severe anxiety or like scrupulosity. If there are difficult situations like that where it maybe needs a little bit more nuance and individualized care for figuring out where a person is at this moment, then this generalized advice or answer I'm going to give might not actually fit. But in general, what I would say is, in the areas of the psychological disorders like anxiety or depression, it's almost impossible to separate out the, you know, physical from the spiritual. And the overlap between the two means that it's always going to include both. And if it's always going to include both on some level, and it might be like 5% spiritual and 95% physical, but the overlap between the two is the psychological, and that's where it gets murky. I would say that availing yourself of the sacramental graces, especially of the healing sacraments, then you're bringing yourself deeper into that healing grace, and there's definitely going to be a positive correlation and an effect of making yourself available to those graces. And so it's, you know, work in progress, little by little, daily, as you say. That's certainly where it can start to take root, and combined with good spiritual direction, good mentorship, good therapy, it starts to open up even deeper channels of healing in those areas.
Yes. That makes sense, Connie?
How's that sound? Absolutely. And I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. You know, I'm a U.S. Navy veteran. Disabled veterans with PTSD and, anxiety and all of that. And I know that for me, doing these things has helped me, absolutely helped me, and has abounded me with the grace to manage my anxiety and depression. And I was just wondering what your thoughts on that were.
Okay.
Okay. I agree wholeheartedly. And I feel like sometimes it's really undervalued or underappreciated on the strength of that, you know.
I would also say, you know, I went to sort of the deepest concept of the sacramental grace, but I would say beyond that too, you know, just the communal reality of going to Mass together, being with other people. You know, there's a lot of other more sort of basic psychological principles that come into play in terms of the ritual, in terms of expressing your faith, having meaning in life. A lot of those things also are really effective with, especially with the symptoms of PTSD.
Colleen, thank you so much for the call, and thank you for your service. I'd love to send you a couple of books we have, since you called about the Eucharist. I'd love to send you The Eucharist is Really Jesus from Joe Heschmeyer, and then Jimmy Akin's little book, The Words of Eternal Life, True Happiness, and Where to Find It. If you would like those too, I'd love to give them to you as our gift. We have a very generous donor who's made it possible for us to give away. Well, we give away a lot of books on the air. I was going to try to give a number, but let's just say a lot of books have been given away on the air thanks to that donor. And thank you again, Colleen. Our guest is Dr. Greg Bataro. He's the founder of Catholic Psych. Tell us again what goes on there.
Yeah, we're working to create a standard of mental health based on an integration of faith, reason, and science, grounding all the psychological sciences on a foundation of a Catholic worldview, philosophy of the human person, and the revelation of Christ. And so we offer services. We offer a mentorship model of sort of stepping outside the box of typical secular psychotherapy. We walk with people on a daily basis, more in line with what Jesus actually does to accompany us. And we also have different courses and workshops and books that we produce. We have a summit coming up, a big event we're putting on. So lots of different things that we try to bring together this idea of what it really means to be human through these different lenses.
And if someone, say, were practicing in the mental health field and wanted to learn your techniques, could they do that?
Yeah, we have a training program. We actually created a certification. It's almost a two-year program called the CP MAP, which is the Catholic Psych Model of Applied Personalism. But you can check all of this out at CatholicPsych.com, and we have our mentorship and our certification available there to learn more about.
CatholicPsych.com is where you should go to find out about it. Dr. Greg Bataro has been our guest. And you can also thank his wife, who I believe has been caring for 7 children while he was here, probably putting them to bed while you're
That's
here
right.
with us. Dr. Bataro, thank you. I really enjoy talking with you, and I love the way you think about these things. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me. It's great to be with you.
That'll do it for us. We'll see you tomorrow, God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Live.